Thank you. Please be seated. The court is ready to hear from petitioners in Hill Electric versus Midlothian Utah.
May it please the court, Mr. Scott Cooley will present argument for the petitioners.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Scott Cooley, and along with Clay Martin, and behind the bar, Ms. Martin is ready to represent Hillco Electric Co-op and Hillco United Services Incorporated. Just a little bit of background. Hillco United Services was created in 1997 as a wholly owned subsidiary of the Hillco Electric Co-op. The Electric Co-op had asked its members, what are some services that you feel like you could use? And overwhelmingly, it came back that they could use propane service. And Hillco United Services does business as Hillco Propane, as we've shown in our briefs. So by creating the subsidiary, what Hillco Electric essentially had done was to come up with a way to, first of all, satisfy the needs of its members in a new era of competition and restructuring of the electric utility industry. And second, it did it in a way that, as you know, it's our position, was perfectly in line with what the legislature did in House Bill 3203 in 1997. Now, before I get into the nuts and bolts of that statute, there's an argument that the respondents have made, and it's tough to know what to call them. Some of them are propane dealers. There were plaintiffs in the trial court, as you know. But there's an argument they've made, and I guess it's really kind of a premise, that it's one of those things I kind of feel I have to catch myself, because if it gets said enough, you start to accept that it's true, and it just isn't, and that is that Hillco Electric is now operating as a for-profit, or operating at least a for-profit part of its own business, and that's just not true. Hillco United Services is a separate legal entity. As the court knows, the Texas Corporation Law provides for that. It was created in that manner. Hillco Electric is still an electric cooperative organized under the Electric Cooperative Act. The question here is not, can Hillco Electric itself engage in the for-profit propane business? The question is very narrow, and that is, can Hillco Electric create and own a subsidiary that is for-profit, and that will it engage in the for-profit propane business? And our answer is, it absolutely can, as long as the purposes of the electric co-op are the ones that are furthered by the creation and ownership of the for-profit subsidiary. House Bill 3203...
And what happens to the profits, if any?
I'm sorry,
what
I didn't hear the last question.
What happens to the profits of the subsidiary? Are they subject to the rules of distribution of the co-op?
What they are subject to those distribution rules, and I want to make the distinction again that they are profits of the subsidiary, and of course the utilities code provides that the electric co-op cannot operate as a profit to its members. But yes, the profits, if there are some, in fact, there aren't always profits, as you know, especially with a young company, do come back up to the electric co-op, and they are designated as such as non-electric revenues. And if there are costs that are less than these revenues, then what the code provides is that it can be given back to the members in a capital distribution. It's not in the record, and I can represent to you that there has not been a situation where the members of the co-op, if they have received capital back, it has put them above what they have contributed, because they would be getting electricity for free. That has not happened. But essentially the profits of the subsidiary, to answer your question, yes, are subject to the same distribution rules once those revenues go back up to the electric co-op.
You said that a survey was done and the members said that what we would like is propane service.
Yes, sir.
What if they said what we would like is, for Hillco to put together a car dealership subsidiary and make profits on that, or McDonald's franchises, or what are the limits to what they can, what Hill Country can create in terms of the subsidiary that benefits its membership?
I think that one limit, of course, is the most practical one, and that is that this is a member-owned organization, and the members, you're talking about a vote by members to create a car dealership, or a liquor store is the favorite example.
That's a practical limitation, but what is there any kind of statutory limitation or constitutional, or what are the limits on what can be created under
3203? I think now that the purposes of the Nonprofit Corporation Act are incorporated, the limits are that the creation has to further those purposes, which are set out in 2.01A of the Nonprofit
Corporation. And one of those services is just benefits the membership, right?
No, the purpose is that it can further, are as broad as the legislature could have written them, in my view.
So there aren't any limits.
Charitable, benevolent. Well, there are, because they have to be necessary, convenient, and appropriate, the powers that are exercised. In this case, the power would be the creation of the car dealership. The statute does say that they have to be necessary, convenient, and appropriate to the purpose of the electric co-op. But yes, the purposes appear to be unlimited by Section 2.01A.
Well, what about combining funds from these other sources, meaning this propane subsidiary, with unclaimed funds to provide and promote educational opportunities and to stimulate rural economic development? Is that still the statutory scheme?
It is, and that is...
Would it be a fair statement to construe that way? Any funds received from the propane operation have to be used along with unclaimed funds to provide educational opportunities and to stimulate rural economic development.
I wouldn't say that all of the funds from the subsidy...
Why not?
Because that provides an avenue for use of those funds, but there is... still the overarching purpose of the co-op, and there are many overarching purposes, and it'd be our position that the funds could go to other things to further the purposes that the co-op has undertaken.
Well, but didn't this scheme evolve from a change from escheating unclaimed funds to the state?
It did, yes, Your Honor.
And now has been expanded to not only involve unclaimed funds that can remain in the hands of the co-op, but other unclaimed funds that could be combined from economic developments from other sources. Why doesn't that limit the use of any funds from the propane thing to those two things, rather than your interpretation that it can be used for any purpose the co-op can be involved in?
Because the way I read 74.3013 of the property code, nonprofit cooperative corporations may combine the development funds with funds from other sources, and those other sources are essentially defined in that amendment as other business and commercial activities. I don't read a limitation that the other funds may only be used in combination with the unclaimed funds.
Well, so what do you use these funds for, if any, that come from the propane business?
They can be reinvested at the level of propane?
No, I'm not asking what they can be. What do you use them for? What does Hilco use them for?
My understanding is, as of now, because it's still getting off the ground, it has not operated at a profit until very recently, the last 3 months, as I understand it. And those funds have been brought up into the electric co-op. And, in fact, if it is in keeping with the code provision that says that the co-op can't operate a profit to its members, which it has been in keeping with that so far. There has been a capital distribution of funds to the co-op's members.
Let me ask you, you started to describe the scenario of the members all vote to start a liquor store. I'm not sure you finished that scenario, but you then moved on to saying, yes, it's as broad as the legislature could say what the purpose of the electric co-op. So tell me why this court could say you could, maybe not. Tell me why you would not be able to have the members vote on having a subsidiary created through the co-op that would own a, I won't use liquor stores too regularly, but... I don't know, something chicken and feed store or some grocery store or something like that, a member-owned grocery store that might be a for-profit organization. Describe why they couldn't do that, but they can have a propane company.
I would not stand here and say they couldn't do that. limits.
Do you think they couldn't do it before 1997?
No, we think that we could because the powers provisions of the Electric Co-op Act were specific enough. But the key there was the only purpose allowed, at least arguably, was rural electrification.
Right.
And that's no longer the case.
But if that was, that seemed like a fairly big change. And why would it be introduced in a bill that relates to the disposition of unclaimed funds?
Because our answer to that is it doesn't relate to the distribution of unclaimed funds, but it also clearly, in the most significant portion of the amendment, states two purposes. That is, disposition of unclaimed funds, but also the stimulation of rural economic development.
I noticed about two-thirds of the way through the extensive briefing in this case that I hadn't read a word of legislative history. And I started to rejoice at that, because I thought people had come to their senses.
I rejoiced when I...
But then it made me suspicious, and I wonder, what does the legislative history show? Did anybody in the legislature ever say that this is going to change the way co-ops do business?
We have not found that legislative history. If it had been in our favor and we'd found it, we'd have put it in there. Presumably the other side would have as well.
It actually says the opposite, doesn't it? I mean, when Mr. Craven testified at the Senate committee about what is this specific change over in Section 4, what's it going to do? He said, oh, it's just a conforming amendment, really. It's just makes it all work together. But he didn't say it's going to let RECs go into the business, liquor business or car business or propane business or any business.
Right. and presumably he was referring to the property code, because what he was saying was Section 18 of the Electric Co-op Act is to conform to the rest of the amendment. Section 743013 specifically says that this is the kind of thing that can happen. Nonprofit cooperative corporations, of which we are one, can engage in these other businesses through affiliates with no limitation on for-profit or not-for-profit, and those funds can then be used to stimulate rural economic development. Admittedly, stimulating rural economic development is a broad charge, but it is the charge that the legislature put in House Bill 3203.
So is it fair to say then, even though it hadn't been briefed, that when this went on local and consent in the House, and maybe in the Senate, I've forgotten, nobody said a word about the issues that we're talking about here today, one way or the other?
That would be my understanding based on our search of exactly what you're talking about. And one thing that we want to point out, I noticed that my time is almost up, is that I've said that subsection 18 is perfectly consistent with the property code 743013, which is part of the amendment. But the purposes that electric co-ops can now further are listed in by incorporation, Article 2.01A of the Nonprofit Corporation Act. The Waco Court's premise, which was faulty from the get-go, was, but this is a nonprofit entity. It cannot in any way be related to for-profit activities because its purposes are nonprofit. We admit the purposes have to remain nonprofit. We're not here to argue that losing battle, but 2.02 of the Nonprofit Corporation Act specifically allows nonprofit corporations to own shares of for-profit or nonprofit subsidiaries.
Well, give you that, but I still ask the same question. What can you do with the money that you receive from your for-profit subsidiaries under the statutory scheme?
It can. I'll move to what can be done with it. It can be reinvested in the for-profit subsidiary. It can be brought up to the electric co-op, and it can then be combined, the electric co-op combines it, with the unclaimed funds and puts it towards rural scholarship and, again, broadly stated, rural economic development. And as Chief Justice Phillips alluded to,
So you do agree that whatever has been a profit in the last 3 months is supposed to go into the account that holds the unclaimed funds?
It's our position that it can. The legislature allows it through subsection.
You just think it's carte blanche with whatever profits made, and there's no limitations.
May I answer?
Yes. please.
The limitations are that whatever is done with it, it has to further the purpose of the co-op. But yes, to answer your question, it has to be in correspondence with what the code says electric co-ops can do with revenues, and that's what Chief Justice Phillips alluded to before. But those are the limits, and they are in the Electric Co-op Act.
But there really are no limits. That's what I'm getting at. I mean, any money that comes into a rural community can be said to stimulate rural economic development, I would think. And so you could have the co-op here and IBM just below it, right? Or Microsoft, or I mean, anything that can generate a profit could, you know, legitimately serve that purpose.
It could legitimately serve those purposes, but the limits are still going to be in effect that it cannot operate as a profit to its members. We have not come to that point yet, I'll be honest with you. So we have thought about it. We don't know exactly what we will do if the for-profit subsidiary makes such a profit that there's money coming out our ears, but the code says what electric co-ops can do with its revenues. We don't see any indication that we're not bound by that.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Michael Kowski, which is an argument from respondents.
Good morning. May it please the court. Mr. Hill and Mr. Moore and Mr. Rogers and I represent the respondents who are all members of the co-op. Yes, some of them are propane dealers, some are not, but their common interest is, and their standing is derived from their membership in the co-op. We want to begin with the proposition that was actually cited by the petitioners in their brief on page 21 with respect to an approach to interpreting statutes. They cite this court's opinion in Fitzgerald versus Advanced Spine Fixation System, where this court said we look at the entire act and not a single section in isolation. What we did, therefore, is attach to our brief on the merits and under tab A the entire House bill of 3203. The entire House bill can be viewed as a whole, and I think is viewed best as a whole, rather than the manner in which those specific amended provisions were reintegrated into the codes. The reason is this. If you look at House Bill 3203, you have to ask yourself, what is this act? What wrong was sought to be remedied? What was the objective here that a legislator thought was necessary to propose this legislation and see it through to a conclusion? Justice Heck mentioned that there's a comment, well, it's just conforming legislation. Conforming to the degree to do what? Well, hypothetically speaking, I have an uncle who's a farmer in Hill County. If he moved into a house, a new house, he would need electricity. He'd likely have to pay a deposit to get electricity for his new house. Now, suppose he got called away to California and had to move off and left, no forwarding address. What happens to that $100 deposit? It becomes unclaimed money. So unclaimed money is what this statute was all about. These unclaimed funds accumulate, and there needs to be a means by which to dispose of them. And the legislature, through this House bill, permits certain enterprises, certain cooperatives, to dispose of unclaimed money. Well, why is legislation necessary? Because these are special purpose corporations. Special purpose corporations don't have broad powers. They have only the powers that the legislature gave them. The Upshur case is sort of scattered throughout our brief, and we rely on heavily, obviously, because Upshur in 1957, this court directly dealt with the powers of an electric cooperative. Electric cooperatives are governed by, and their powers are derived from, the act which creates them.
Why would the members of a co-op object to an expansion of its activities that might make them money?
Well, let's look
unless
at,
they were competitive.
Let's look at Denton County Co-op. Denton County Co-op went bankrupt because it tried to diversify. Dallas Morning News and Fort Worth Star-Telegram in December of 2001. Of course, that's not a part of the record, but that's a hypothetical reason why they might not want to. We don't want to invest our money, our membership, into a potentially money-losing entity. As Mr. Cooley noted, they went into business in 1997. This is 2002. and they just now broke even. Of course, that's not a part of the record either, but they've been investing in a money-losing proposition for a long time. That's a reason, a rationale not to want to do it. And this member survey that was distributed, of course, you can make a member survey read any way you want to elicit the interest in propane business that you want to elicit. And we've noted that in our record, and those member surveys are part of the record in the overall. But that's a rationale for not wanting to do it.
And you think that there's no way to read the original Act, not with just the amendments that apply, but there's no way to read the original Act to say that an electric cooperative couldn't branch out into some other activities.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Even if the money that's left over for economic development, I guess the money that's left over for economic development wouldn't include creating jobs or trying to encourage other businesses or anything.
Let me make sure I understand the question. You're talking about prior to 1997, prior to this amendment? Prior to this amendment, any money left over, any unclaimed
that
funds,
is cheated.
So now, under 3203, the first part of it is set out in the tab A of our index, demonstrates the mechanism by which you can take those funds and you pay them to the comptroller and you account for them. Okay? The second half of the statute, or the House bill, deals with the various entities affected by this new opportunity to keep local funds local instead of sending them to the good folks in Austin. And so several entities had to have their statutory derivative powers amended slightly in order to accomplish that. And all of those are set out in the House bill.
As a practical matter, did the money, did the comptroller send the money back to the counties?
I don't know that.
What does stimulate rural economic development?
Well, if we read this as a whole, it's clear that it's dealing with funds, almost identifiable funds. You can either create a scholarship fund or an economic development fund, as it's stated in most of these provisions. There is one or two instances when it gets a little broader in the language where it says stimulate rural economic development. But read in context, it seems to be pump priming. The legislature has often created economic development corporations or funds, and if we're going to construe the word economic development fund consistent with the way the legislature has used it previously, we're talking about pump priming funds that can help the local folks create jobs, create some opportunities, help rural kids with scholarship money for college, and keep the money locally for these specific local uses.
They don't seem to have thought that would be more than $1 million. There's $1 million cap, right?
I believe that's right.
And actually, there's testimony that it might have been a whole lot less than that. It seems to be a fairly modest stimulus.
Our understanding is it is a modest, but this is not the type of bill that was intended to change the law in the dramatic fashion argued by the COVID.
But such cooperatives may engage in other business and commercial activities in their own behalf and through subsidiaries and affiliates that deem necessary in order to stimulate rural economic development.
To provide
it just an accounting provision to make. That's G.
Okay. Well, it's to provide and promote educational opportunities that they can combine these funds with other funds to do those things.
Propane for kids.
I'm sorry.
Propane for kids.
Well, we disagree. When you get past the mechanical aspect of the statute and what we believe in the broad sense it was intended to do, and that was to simply amend these specific special purpose corporations ever so slightly in order to permit this to occur, the primary provision relied upon by the co-ops is this Section 18, which was amended as part of the list of powers to pick up where it left off. It used to be that the co-ops had powers as may be necessary, convenient, or appropriate to effectuate the purpose for which the corporation is organized. It used to be a period. The legislature added, including other or additional purposes, B, benefiting members and non-members, whether directly or through affiliates, described in Section A of the nonprofit, 2.01. Well, what are those purposes listed there? Mr. Cooley said, well, that's where you get into the argument about, well, it's as broad as you want it to be. We disagree strongly with that. There's a statutory construction concept of the old Latin phrase that's used in generis, and of course different people say it in different ways in Texas. But if you've got specific words and general words, the specific words are going to control the general. And on page 11 of our brief, we set out what those purposes from the Nonprofit Act are that they're limited to. They're charitable, benevolent, religious, heliomissionary, patriotic, etc. Those are not liquor stores. Those are not propane businesses. Those are not for-profit exercises. Those are things that are consistent with the notion of scholarship funds, perhaps an economic development fund for local use.
But not a nonprofit corporation can invest in a for-profit corporation.
Well, here's the problem with that. 2.03B of the Nonprofit Act says that it does, that the Nonprofit Act does not apply to electric cooperatives. It just doesn't. And therefore, the powers that most nonprofits have to do that, to invest in for-profit or not-for-profit companies, electric cooperatives have never had. And we don't think that this changed anything. All it did was permit the limited expansion of its powers to engage in purposes benefiting members or non-members as described in Section A 2.01, which is the list of charitable, benevolent, heliomissionary type activities. It does not give them the additional power to own stock in a subsidiary, for-profit or otherwise. That's a power that they didn't grant. They certainly could have, but did not, in our reading of this statute.
But if a nonprofit can do those things, what in this language keeps electric co-ops?
2.03B keeps co-ops from doing it.
2.03 of the Nonprofit Act.
Correct.
This just says 2.01.
That's correct. The only expansion of power was an expansion to do the purposes described in 2.01. If they wanted to adopt all of the powers of nonprofits, they could have done so.
How would they have done it differently? What would they have said differently?
Well, they could have said, instead of additional purposes benefiting members or non-members, limiting it to 2.01A, they could have expanded it to all powers of the nonprofit act, instead of just limiting it to the purposes described in 2.01A. It was a very limited deal. This is consistent with the expansion of powers for the other affected special purpose entities. Those other affected special purpose entities also had some little provision within their special purpose act amended slightly to permit them to do that which was the purpose of this bill, and that's to dispose of or keep these unclaimed funds that otherwise would have gone to Austin. So it was, I hope I've answered your question.
How do categories in 2.01A, how can they be said to be used in a way that stimulates economic development in rural areas?
Well, I think an economic development fund whereby there's some local pump priming, it could fall within that. It's a missionary, educational, scientific, social, charitable, benevolent. I think that that's not inconsistent. Where I do think that a formation of and exercise of a for-profit corporation, whether it's for propane or car dealer or chicken feed, is not consistent.
Well, part of those in A, you have agricultural and horticultural activities, which could be, those aren't necessarily nonprofit. They could be, you know, a farming operation or something. So could, under your analysis, could a co-op create a for-profit agricultural enterprise?
No, not in my analysis.
Why not?
Because these are powers. These are the limited purposes of a nonprofit corporation. Electric cooperatives are nonprofit. There's a reference over to the nonprofit section or the nonprofit purposes for which they may expand their power slightly. If they wanted to permit nonprofit electric cooperatives to get into for-profit businesses, it was easy to say so, just as I just said. There's plain English language to use to do that. To bury that change in the law, that expansive change in the law, in this little House bill that's designed only to deal with unclaimed funds is way too dramatic, which, of course, leaps us over into our secondary argument, which we don't think we ever have to get to, but our secondary argument with respect to a constitutional issue. On pages 21 and 22 of the brief of the petitioners, pardon me, they walk through how, if you look at these acts that were amended, for example, the Agriculture Code, that it was amended to permit delivery of money to a scholarship fund for rural students. That the Marketing Association Act was amended also to permit that to occur. But then they say, but wait a minute, but this Section 18 change of the Electric Cooperative Act, that's completely different. It expands our powers greatly. It permits us to go into for-profit businesses. And the legislature decided to treat us differently than they did these other entities. To that we say, wait a minute. Why did they, if they're treating you differently, if they're giving you new powers that they didn't give everybody else, and if the House bill clearly says that it's dealing only with the disposition of unclaimed funds, then there's a second subject buried in this bill. And you can't have it both ways. If there's a second subject buried in this bill that permits you all these additional powers that nobody else got.
Well, what if the caption had been an act relating to the expansion of operations of rural electric co-ops and the disposition of unclaimed funds? Surely that would be okay.
It would help, but there's still no language within the rest of the act which gives that power.
But doesn't the petitioner points out, though, that you can't have a misleading caption problem anymore.
That's correct. But that doesn't make the caption irrelevant to the assessment that this court has to make over whether they've tried to bury two subjects in the same bill. And again, we agree with the petitioner that this court is duty bound to try to find a constitutional interpretation for this statute. We don't ever want to get to the unconstitutional.
I'm not sure the Constitution was as concerned about burying something in a bill as it was putting two or three or four or five or eight or ten things in a bill that make people vote for things that they don't want to vote for.
Riders and such, and log rolling is the term that's used in the cases. And I agree, but to that extent, we've been log rolling. If that expansive new purpose was intended by somebody in the legislature to occur, because there's certainly been, as you've read, no debate on that issue, on whether it's a good thing or a bad thing to expand and permit electric cooperatives to diversify. All the amicus briefs, or several of the amicus briefs, said, well, you know, it's a good thing. It's a national trend. It's a growing thing. Those are great policy arguments to make, but they're not to be made here. They're to be made next door. And that's where we think that that argument ought to be taken. Whether this is a good idea for nonprofits to be able to engage in this, we're not here to argue. As the Upshur case stated in 1957, the court saw this sort of thing coming, and it said that it was not surprising to discover that extraneous matters have crept into the case. The court said, we cannot as a court be concerned in this case with questions of public policy. That is a matter for the legislature. Our duty is to interpret the language of the Electric Cooperative Corporation Act. And in that case, they clearly stated that the Electric Cooperative Corporation Act is a limited purpose act. That the only powers that an electric cooperative has are those that are strictly prescribed by statute and no more. And those powers were not expanded in this House bill to permit them to enter for-profit corporations. They were not expanded to permit them to own shares in for-profit corporations. The Nonprofit Act still contains that prohibition, but it does not apply to the Electric Cooperative Act. And therefore, we don't think that any statutory interpretation can get them from here to there. We rely on our briefs and our argument, and I've saved a couple of seconds if anybody has a question.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Just a few things. We're going to respectfully disagree that the purposes from the Nonprofit Corporation Act are as limited as Mr. Cosby says they are, because what the actual language says, such purpose or purposes may include without being limited to, and then it goes on through the laundry list. And we said this in our brief, and I'll reiterate it, we feel like the Court of Appeals unquestionably confused purposes and powers. And I feel like Mr. Cosby just did the same thing, because he said liquor stores are not charitable or not benevolent, neither is propane gas. That is the exercise of a power by the electric co-op. The purposes are what those ventures are to further. They are not the same thing. You cannot say, well, the power section doesn't say anywhere that they can create a liquor store. No, but the power section is very explicit in saying that it can carry out any and all acts and things to benefit members and non-members directly or through affiliates, which is exactly what Hilco US is.
But just so we'll be clear, your position on that is because the co-op is, that's its mission anyway, and that's the nature of its membership. Anything it did, car dealership or whatever, Bloomingdale's or whatever, would be in the furtherance of that purpose, just by definition. So that there are no, so the Court of Appeals was right about this. Under your position, there are no practical limits. There are no limits, period, on what the co-op could do.
As long as the power that they exercise is necessary, convenient, or appropriate to further its purposes, then my answer to that has to be no. The legislature chose not to put the type of limit that you're talking about in the statutory language. And I would say the same thing Mr. Cosby did. If it needs to be in there, it needs to be taken up in the legislature.
Mr. Cosby said that 2.03 can be read to prohibit the electric co-op from engaging and having subsidiaries for profit. And can you respond to that?
Absolutely. Predictably, we disagree with that. All 203B says is the Nonprofit Corporation Act as a whole does not apply to electric co-ops. There's no question about that. But certainly the Electric Co-op Act has now incorporated Section 2.01 of the Nonprofit Corporation Act into the Electric Co-op Act. And our point regarding that is simply that the entire premise of the Court of Appeals opinion, which was, well, now come on, nonprofit corporations can't own for-profit subsidiaries. Their purposes are nonprofit. Or, I'm sorry, electric co-ops can't own for-profit subsidiaries because their purposes are nonprofit, is completely gutted by the fact that nonprofit corporations whose purposes are nonprofit can own for-profit subsidiaries. And our position would be that our powers provision is even broader than the laundry list of powers that is found in the Nonprofit Corporation Act. I want to deal very quickly with one subject rule, because we feel like the court is going to get to it, because we feel like the statute is going to be found to be valid, and in that case, the one subject rule will be analyzed. Our position there, and I would quote the court's opinion in Jimenez, which said, any sort of code necessarily involves many different kinds of individual provisions, because it involves those provisions. Nothing of these latter will violate the one subject restriction if it has any logical relationship to the general subject. And the provision at issue here not only has a logical relationship to the general subject, but there is an actual reference, as I talked about before, in the property code amendment portion of the statute to the exact kind of activity that it is that we're saying we're allowed to engage in. And that's significant because we were able to find one case where the Austin Court of Appeals invalidated a statute based on the body of the statute, the bill. And the court specifically singled out the fact that there was no reference in either the so-called rogue provision to other portions of the statute, and consequently no reference in the other portions of the statute to it. That's not the case here. We don't have a specific reference to subsection 18 in the property code provision, but we do have a specific reference, like I said, to the exact type of activity that it is that we are trying to and are engaging in at this point. It can't be mistaken that subsection G says that there are affiliates that can be carrying out activities that can be combined.
Let me ask you just one quick question. There are some 60 to 70 electrical co-ops in Texas, is that right? What percentage of those operate for-profit corporations, or do you know?
I don't know the answer to that. I can cite you to the amicus brief filed by Texas Electric Cooperatives, They said many. They said many own for-profit subsidiaries. I know of a couple, Pernellis. If you drive by their office on 620, you can see their for-profit subsidiary sign right below it.
So if we were to hold that those were not legal, that you could not do that, what happens to those for-profit subsidiaries?
I think the only answer is people are out of jobs. They would have to be disbanded.
Or spun off. I'm just trying to figure out what effect our holding, if we were to rule that way, would have.
Absolutely. I think that it would have that effect. If not, people losing jobs, and like you said.
I guess it's not so much a policy question I'm asking as if we were to hold that they've been operating illegally, what are the ramifications of that decision?
I can envision suits by other members like this lawsuit saying, well, look what you've been doing. You've been wasting all of our money. If indeed that's the case, I mean, if the facts would support it. Lawsuits, I can't go so far as to say co-ops are going to suffer, but I can say that there is a new era of restructuring that this
well,
has come
on. Well, you can't really
heels.
Say that unless we know what percentage of nonprofits, I mean, of for-profits there are.
We can't really say what.
To be fair, that there's some sea change here.
Right. Those co-ops that presumably did create for-profits because of the restructuring, or at least.
We don't have any of those.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument, and the second call will take another recess.
All right.